Today,
it's Edwin's Wednesday evening property rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is posts covering finance and property news. Eureka! Edwin is back. Edwin, nice to see you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to see you, Martin, and I'm back. Did you miss me?
Oh, absolutely. To say I missed you is an understatement. You know, this is our normal picture. I made a couple of shows, which was sort of half a property rant, right? Which doesn't have quite the same effect. So it's really good to see you back. And I know your voice isn't 100%, but thanks for giving it your all.
All good. Just got to keep on going and push through. But I watch those rants and among other videos that you've been doing posting over the last couple of weeks. But it's been an interesting end of month and the beginning of August, to say the least.
Well, there's quite a lot going on, and you know, whichever way you look at it, you got to sort of scratch your head a little bit and say, what on earth is going on? Anyway, you saw this. This was actually the house price to pay ratio, the worst ever. This is from AMP chief economist Shane Oliver. House prices have skyrocketed to a record close of 14 times the average annual wage compared to about 3 times 100 years ago. And of course, now average income is 2 incomes. It's just getting harder and harder, he said. And of course, that mirrors the stories elsewhere. And we also got the Sydney median price hits 1.5 million according to Cotality. It climb. And this was the latest from Cotality in terms of what's going on here. Silly numbers. And I'd also make the point, Edwin, that the latest in terms of the build, we're still way off. And that article, which I referred to just now, makes the point over the year, a total of 185,844 homes were approved. That's a lift, 13.5% uplift, but still way, 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 way short, 55,000 short of the 240,000 we actually need to meet the federal target of 1.2 million by 2029. So the supply side is bust, but never fear, the government's going to pump the market some more because they've allowed another 25,000 householders to come in, you know, through the lift in student numbers this year. So you can't believe it. And then, of course, you've got the normal reporting. Prices, auctions booming, according to the data from PropTrack and as reported in the papers there. But as we'll see shortly, it ain't the full story.
That's 100%. But the interesting thing is that you and I said in the last election, the Australian people chose renters over landlords. I mean, it was a matter of choose your poison. You and I knew. And have been calling it since back of 2019, what was going to happen with regard to immigration. I mean, people called us all sorts of things under the sun, but here we are. Now, you can't cry over spilled milk, but also along the way, along the years, we've said that it's time that people need to understand and need to diversify and be multi-skilled. And they have to one lifetime profession it wasn't going to cut the mustard anymore. And that was coming from even 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, when I was talking about diversification and looking at other things that you could do whilst you were doing your own operation. Just look at other hobbies and the like. So now we're at a point where two parents are working. The kids are going to be forced, not encouraged, but forced to go and work at McDonald's when they turn 14 and 9 months. And the pets are going to have to become, Instagram or TikTok influencers in order to bring in some cash. I mean, if you haven't got 3, 4, 5 sources of income coming in, you're going to pretty much be on the street. I mean, it almost sounds like a joke, but in essence, I know people that are working two jobs. Both adults are working two jobs, and the kids are looking at different ways to to earning a quid just to stay where they want to live. And this is one of the many aspects that you and I, even before all this, the pandemic happened, you and I started talking about, all roads lead to the major cities. And that was always the plan. And now we know why. Yeah, you got the 2030 agendas, you got the 2050 agenda, you got the 15-minute cities, you got all these things coming in that many were talking about being conspiracy theories. But you and I started talking about this and whoa, because I was looking at all the planning proposals at all the infrastructure, and why was major infrastructure taken back from the western suburbs, and this is in Sydney, back into the city centres, when and displacing 23,000 jobs, and businesses were going broke. I mean, after spending hundreds of millions of dollars, with the law courts in Parramatta, nobody wants to sit there. The main judges don't want to sit there because they don't want to leave the Eiffel Tower in the eastern suburbs and in the lower North Shore areas. So this is it. But it's all planned, it's all being orchestrated. Look, there is no real infrastructure apart from the Badgerys Creek Airport, which is going to become an Avalon, because to this day, as I keep on saying over and over again, and as I used to talk to Alan Jones on when he was back in 2GB, and we used to talk about the planning of the second airport, and even back to about 15 years ago, even longer. I was saying, to date, I have not seen, and nothing's been provided with regards to how the hell they're going to the planning on getting the jet fuel to Badgerys Creek. When there's no plans for rail, no plan for piping, the only thing that I could think of is a convoy of double bogie tankers going from Kurnell all the way to Badgerys Creek 24/7, and it's going to be chaotic, and it's going to be that's what I'm saying. It's really a white elephant, in my view, but there's supposedly all this infrastructure around there, but you've got all this housing, you've got housing estates. With no real school, no real schooling, tertiary or primary, secondary or tertiary education, and no real facilities for medical, because it is getting more expensive to have a family and more expensive to grow old.
It is absolutely. It is absolutely. And you say, well, who is the government, looking after? They're not looking after the ordinary people, it seems to me.
No.
But as I said, if you actually are foreign students, well, don't worry. An extra 25,000 are coming in 2026, according to the national planning level. But as Scott Phillips said, they've got to be kidding. Surely, if we can provide additional housing, then there are more than enough people already here or planning to arrive who can use that accommodation. Increasing student numbers is nuts. I agree with that. And of course, the coalition's decided to go on the attack to attack Labour on housing. But funnily enough, they don't seem to be mentioning migration and, some of the planning stuff that we've been talking about. It's like, we want to be seen to be doing something, but we don't really want to be seen to doing much because we really probably agree with most of what's going on. So we are in this twilight zone, Edwin, where we know that the average Australian is struggling more and more to be able to find somewhere to live. Most people who are actually buying are buying in areas where there's very little infrastructure in place. And I mean, shopping, schools, or if you actually are on the road, then you've got to pay tolls. And of course, that means about paying a lot more. And so it's completely nutty. And of course, the answer is, well, maybe go up. But then if you go up, then of course, you've got to take account of strata fees. And did you see this? I was really amused. With MIMS now talking about a major review of the ban on commissions for strata managing agents, and that could affect the housing market if it comes amid mounting concerns that strata insurance prices have been driven by agents who are paying commissions between 15 and 20%. So this is another example of where we have the situation. We're building up, which of course is what the New South Wales government want to do, but they're not tackling this critical issue. Now, whether this will move the dial or not, but we know strata agents are actually making a mozza out of all of this because a lot of investors are paying a lot more for strata fees than they used to.
Martin, I've been bringing this argument to the forefront with back with Property Observer, domain when they used to call me for assistance as well with some of their articles, and when Jennifer Duke was there, and I used to lay it all on the table. I mean, I used to go to toe to toe with a lot of strata companies because I know how the game works. I know how it's rigged. I know the fact that any trade working in a strata company, they there's a 5 to 10% kickback to the strata manager. The strata companies don't make money out of managing the properties, out of the strata fees. They don't make money. That is not the game, Martin. That is not the game. The game is you make money out of the extras, out of the maintenance contracts, out of the cleaning contracts, out of the lawn mowing contracts, out of the plumbing contracts, out of the all the other contractors in the along the chain of trades and people that need to that you need to maintain a building. That's where the real jam is. That's where the premium, apart from the actual intrinsic value or the value of the what we call the strata roll or the rent roll, that has a value because of the monies that you can earn from it, right? So that is from I mean, I've been in the industry almost 30 years, and I know how the game is rigged, and it's rigged against landlords, it's rigged against property owners, it's rigged against tenants. So, and this is why we have the show. This is why we have the Monday evening rants. Why it's an educational piece of information, so that people can can be on the front foot and not be. We try and put the ordinary the ordinary Jane, ordinary Joe, on as much as possible on an even playing field, so that they can be equipped to. To go toe to toe with all the unsavory people in the industry. There are some great people, but unfortunately the majority is made up of crap. So this is where we are, Martin. So and then when you start overlaying that with the with government policy and government government bureaucracy, you get to what we've got in Western Australia with 10,000 homeless living on the streets, 22,000 or so, 23,000 applicants for housing, and at the and in the same breath, you've also got dozens and dozens of government-owned buildings, residential buildings that have been under maintenance for the last 5, 10 years. I mean, and you want to bring in hordes of renters. Into the country, and you're displacing the what used to be the dreamers, what used to be the Aussie battler that just being battered down so much that it's hard to to try and get up again. And you've got this homelessness happening in WA, also Victoria, and you're going to see a lot more in Queensland as well, and coming soon to Sydney. But in the same breath, you've got current political figures and ex-politicians that have also on the superannuation gravy train for life, making deals with lands that are worth zero. But yet, a current politician endorses it, and all of a sudden, there's development potential for renewables or solar, wind farms, and every other thing, because of and the land goes up in value from, let's say from a dollar to $100, per square inch, and that's a gravy train. That is the industry. That's why we say to our young followers and listeners, if you're going to aspire to something. Forget being a doctor, forget being an accountant, forget being a lawyer. You got to start heading towards a political career, and if you can get yourself a real estate license along the way, I mean you've got a mate.
Exactly right. Well, it is amazing, isn't it, that there are people able to make massive incomes and build secure futures around and connected to property, And then you've got ordinary people who are trapped in trying to get on the property ladder, as we showed earlier, with a very high debt to income ratio. We've got a lot of homeless people. We have also a lot of tent cities, and I get more and more people sending me photographs of tent cities in places you would never have dreamt that they would be. You know, they started along the Brisbane River and they've spread out. And they're around in Sydney now as well, and Melbourne as well, and Perth. It is disaster. And yet the government is still flooding the country with more people who cannot be housed, and then turn up the wick on students. And then the quality of the stuff that's being built is so poor as well. And then the strata managers make a mozza through the Rose Commission. I mean, everywhere you look, this thing is completely unbalanced. And the original dream, the Australian dream of owning somewhere to live, a bit of land, and, make your family there, it's just a mirage now. That's why the average age for housing formation has moved up about 10 years from where it used to be. But the vacant property across Australia, it's more than 1.25 million vacant properties still. So why aren't we talking about releasing those vacant properties back into the market? But no, we can't do that, can we? There's something fundamentally broken. I'm afraid my view is more and more the politicians are part of the problem. They are actually the key problem. That's the problem. And they're working against ordinary Australians.
Yeah, and look, if you are seriously about reform in the rental arena and with regards to strata, you would really police that a lot more than what it's been policed at the moment. And what you would be doing is you would be going through each strata complex with a fine-tooth comb. And you would be, if it's a two-bedroom complex, I mean, you could have four adults, but when you start amassing 10 adults in a two-bedroom apartment in a high-rise development, and you got them all over Sydney. But when you start policing that and looking at the safety aspects and really knocking some heads around, there'll be a lot more backlash from international students not wanting to come to Australia because they can't be accommodated properly. I mean, there was already backlash from international students because they're having to pay $250 $250 to $350 a week for a bunk, not for a room, not for a room, but a bunk. And there was a lot of backlash 12, 18 months ago, and that sort of died off. But now we're back to look, I know property owners. I know people that own property, and I also know there's a shadow industry as well, which we've raised a lot of spoken a lot about it, but it goes deeper, it gets darker with regards to budget accommodation, where you've got individuals that have made it an actual business out of renting apartments around infrastructure, particularly around tertiary education facilities, and then subleasing out bunks. So they are leasing under companies and trusts. They are leasing properties. One individual, which I think we shared about 5 or 6, maybe 8 weeks ago, we shared on the show. I mean, he's got 30 properties now. He owns two of them himself. The rest he leases them, and then he subleases the month. He furnishes them and then subleases them. I mean, he's getting on average across the western suburbs, he's getting $250 a week per bed. And in some of the older places, he puts two double bunks in the master bedroom. That you multiply four beds by $250, and that's what he's getting per room effectively. This also hides the real figures because you're really putting in 10, 12 people in a 2-3 bedroom apartment that they should really only accommodate four. What the pressure that we're seeing is nothing really. If things were governed properly, and if there weren't so many charlatans in the industry that turn a blind eye to this, because the real estate industry has a lot to call. It's only a matter of time, Martin. It's only really a matter of time. It's not if, but when, where we're going to end up having more deaths in high-rise developments because of overcrowding and people unable to escape the fire hazards that have been created by rechargeable batteries, scooters, and all this EV shit, and simply overcrowding, and the cooking facilities in complexes where there's they don't have gas, then they have these portable, literally barbecues inside the kitchen to cook, because the people that are renting these units are accustomed to cooking with gas. It's only a matter of time. It's really it's like it's just ticking time bombs that will happen all over Sydney, and that's the sad part about it. It's not until we're going to end up with those catastrophes like we did over in Bankstown many years ago, with that lass trying to escape the fire by jumping out of the balcony. I'm sure there's a lot of others that haven't been reported, and they're being suppressed. But it's just a matter of time. That's the unfortunate thing. That's the sad part of it, Mark.
No, I agree, absolutely. And this high density story is one which I think doesn't get enough coverage. And I've spoken to a number of people who've desperate to find anywhere to live, and they're being asked to pay very high rents for very, very poor quality, or a room or a bed, or and even bed sharing in some. I mean, it's ridiculous what's going on. And yet, this isn't something which the mainstream want to talk about. Another thing the mainstream doesn't want to talk about very much is the not in my backyard. And this post I thought was really interesting, right? So this is actually somebody has got to stop this Mosman woman's $500,000 vow to fight state housing reforms. And as the Reserve Bank of Property post says, that's right, Mosman doesn't need poor people trying to get a cheap roof over their heads anywhere near their neighborhood, I guess they mean. That's what the western suburbs are for. And that is really a very clear articulation of another big issue. Not in my backyard, please.
Yeah, and I mean the heading should be, "What do you mean the Smiths are moving into our neighborhood?" That's my YouTube, or this, or should we say the Sings? What do you mean the Sings are moving into our neighborhood? But as Zac Brown puts it, just think one, you foresaw this perfectly. We've been how long have we been discussing this, Martin? The fight that the councils were going to have, and it was going to be, and it's in your face. But again, for 20 more years, I've been saying that when the grants had been given, being dished out by the different political parties that had the helm, I was putting out stories back then on different investment magazines that the solution to affordability and first home buyers coming into the market after different after the GFC and other economic downturns that we had along the way, that the way to do it wasn't to subsidize first home buyers getting into the market, because that only increases the value of the property by the seller or the developer, but it was more to look at the taxes that the governments are charging on things that have been built new. I mean, this is something that I've been saying for like I said, over 2 decades, and I've got the receipts to prove it by the stories that were published in these magazines. But also the second one to that was my stance on the fact that for whatever reason we stopped. Not for whatever reason, but because of the NIMBYs, we stopped developing the small and medium developments in suburbs, which was a natural part of the development of in the growth of a suburb. But as what we've also brought out in the show, Martin, and that is that this is a cross that a lot of these NIMBYs and retirees are going to have to carry later on in the future. And this is the sword. They're going to fall on their own sword, because when they need to retire, when they need to go into a facility where, like a nursing home or a retirement village, guess what? You can't build those in those suburbs. They've got to build them further out. And if you do, you've got greater competition at hand. So they're going to have to move further out. So they're really going to fall on their own sword, and they are falling on their own sword in many places. Many people are, because now they realize that, shit, I've got to move 40, 50 kilometers away, because one, there's nowhere to downsize to, and guess what? I've got no choice, because these facilities can't be built in these areas anymore. They've got to be built further out, for the same reason that the land values have gone up so much that these commercial developments are not viable. When you're sitting on prime real estate. And this is what we've done, because we've stopped the natural development of areas close to the commercial hubs, because everybody wanted to keep the massive blocks of land and the homes that are dilapidating and falling to bits. That's where we are, and we're at a crossroads. But guess what? Do the government, state government, or the local governments care? No, they don't. Because at the end of the day, they'll just put on more committees, and they'll just get more grants from that the taxpayers will have to bear, and just, as you say, kick the can further down the road.
Absolutely. It is perpetual, and unfortunately we're continuing to the fallout of it. And yeah, I've had a number of conversations with people in my one-to-ones recently, where they are contemplating having to dispose of the property that they've got to downsize. You know, they're at that stage of life, but they can't find anything at all of any quality anywhere close, and they're in an absolute dilemma. You know, do they convert what they've got? Do they try and cut it in half and, you know, let out half of it? Or do they just stay there and, you know, realize that they're going to live in this rather large place for a lot longer than they were expecting? Or do they try and find, but they can't find anything anywhere in the area where all their friends and family and connections are. And so they're facing this horrendous dilemma. And again, it's a result of the poor planning and the NIMBYism. So, you know, it's the never ending story. Now, there's another never ending story as well, Edwin, and that relates to working from home, right? And you know, it's fascinating to see how this is played out. I did some a recent anti-spruik videos, and I looked at, for example, the south coast of New South Wales, and I looked at some areas up in Queensland, and things are not going quite as people expected with working from home. But there's another trap which people should be thinking about, and that is that there could be a tax obligation as well if you do actually work from home.
Yeah, and this is where people have got to be really, really careful. And I'll talk from for I don't know the state laws around land tax and working from. I don't know how they work there, but here it's going to be very difficult unless they change the regulations and bring them on par with Victoria. They could, they can. It's a Labor government, but in relation to CGT, that is a tricky one. So no matter where you are, what state you're in, my understanding is, and I'm not a not giving tax tax advice, or we're not giving tax advice, but this is just what I've been informed, and I'm just sharing it as hearsay. It's if you're going to start working from home, and you're going to start potentially claim the interest repayment on your home. In other words, you're gonna make a you're gonna make a tax claim, which you've got the right to do, because part of your home is now being used for business purposes, or for for working purposes, as opposed to being a principal place of residence. So you can reduce your taxable exposure. But this is where then CGT kicks in. So this is That is now how that's going to play out long term, I don't know, but that's how it stands currently. Now, outside of the taxable implications that you have from working from home, there are two other things that should be more concerning with regard to these changes. One of them is insurance. If you're going to work from home 2 days a week and you're going to start seeing, you could be seeing clients that your business that you could be in a position where you need to see clients, and your principal place of residence becomes a pseudo or a satellite workplace. Well, you've got insurance implications as an owner occupier. But you've also got more insurance implications if you are a landlord and you're leasing the property to somebody that is now working from home 2 days a week, and they've got clients or getting delivery of parcels or goods to the home. Now you've got, and that's where you've got to be really, really careful, because I think that's what's going to bite people a lot harder than the wranglings with the ATO about CGT or land tax. I think the insurance implications are a lot more costly, and could end up damaging your wealth position a lot quicker and a lot and hit you a lot harder. That's one of the main points. The second point is what you and I said, Martin, if you recall, at the beginning of 2020, when this whole thing happened, we said if businesses start allowing you to work from home, this is what we said back in 2020. What makes you think they're not going to start looking abroad, and which is what they did, which was what they have been doing, and they will continue to do for the talent that you think you have to perform from home? Why can't they do that, shit from people overseas for a lot cheaper? And look at what's happening in India, and look at the ramifications of that, and now the outflow of money, because all the businesses there, the centers there, the IT centers predominantly, going, let's say, from turning over $500,000 a year to turning over, $10, $15 million a year plus, and creating the wealth over in India, which is now finding its way back into Australia and buying the real estate. So really, this is where that is the bigger picture. That is the international picture that we bring to our viewers and understanding how it impacts us. Look, there are certain. I'm not against working from home. I'm not necessarily, but these are just the implications. So if you're gonna push for it, you gotta take the good with the bad, right? So what do you do? I like that phrase. Choose your poison.
Absolutely. And I was just overlay that with the AI discussion. And of course, more people are now beginning to wake up to the idea that AI is going to come after some people's jobs. And if you're actually already doing your job remotely from home, well, I wonder whether the AI could do it to even more cheaply than you. So I feel the jobs market is quite fragile. And of course, the latest statistics probably are off, a bit like the US, where the BLS has had to make some corrections there recently. And of course, the head of the BLS got sacked by Trump. But in Australia, I don't believe the statistics here either. And I think the unemployment rate's already quite high. But when you overlay all the things you've been talking about, and AI, the jobs market is wobbly, and of course, the wobbly jobs market could have an impact on property prices more generally. And of course, there's a big discussion, isn't there, ahead as to what's going to happen with property prices. And it's interesting, there's the occasional article now that comes out and says that things like Australia's housing market would crash if these factors are aligned. And it starts off by saying Australian property market crash may be laughable, but it's politically sensitive, sure. But there are some issues, or even realistic, or even possible, if certain things happened. And this is, I think, quite an interesting and important observation. And it's worth, I think, highlighting, Edwin, that the prospective rate cuts, which of course everyone's banking on, it's certainly feasible, but there's some articles now suggesting that maybe the rate cuts are not going to be anything like as dramatic as people were thinking. And this article came out that said the RBA expected to kill rapid fire cuts. And that's because basically we've got still inflation bubbling around. We've also got the RBA worried about the impact of tariffs internationally and the flow on for higher inflation. And some of the latest inflation data might not be as positive as people were thinking. We'll know next week where the RBA cuts. They probably will cut next week. But anybody banking on major rate cuts could be a bit mistaken, I think, ahead. So that's worth just taking account of. And then the other angle here, of course, is you can look over the ditch. And over in New Zealand, the story there is really quite different with regard to what's going on with regards to property over there. And, you know, there's the grim warning what New Zealand housing collapse could mean for Aussies. House and price rents have tanked in New Zealand. Leading experts issue a grim warning to millions in Australia. And just in New Zealand, this is the latest catality data. So you can see there that the peak of prices in 2021 in Auckland, you know, close to 1.4 million, now back to a million. And you can see much of the same trends. And in fact, over the last year, New Zealand prices down, you know, Hamilton up, yeah, great, but Dunedin down and Auckland down, the big centre, of course, and particularly Auckland over the past 3 months down 1.4%. So 16% down, I think, Edwin, is what New Zealand is. So, you know, there's a little bit of fluffiness over there. And of course, the question is, people are getting a bit nervous now here. However, strong demand in Australia, and as we've said, demand means that there's still good price momentum in some areas, but not universally so, possibly.
Yeah, well, the problem is, man, the problem is that your bloody relatives from New Zealand, you know, they just keep on jumping the border and coming over here. But yeah, this is what we've been saying also, you can talk about these. Look, the perfect, in my opinion, in my view, this is my view, right? The perfect storm will be, you put the brakes on immigration altogether, right? Put the brakes on immigration altogether. Interest rates don't go down, and the government gets serious about building, and we start cranking up construction as of. You know, in other words, we start putting in measures to really crank up, incentivize the builders and the all the retired builders and the people that want to come back into the game, but they can't because things just don't work, and readdress the small medium density developments in established areas. Not new subdivisions, right? In established areas, then you got a ball. Yeah, then you got a game. Then you got a ball game, as they say. Now, without addressing at least those three overarching pillars or key points, we're not going to get anywhere. You either approach them, you combine it and then you work on it. But give me a government, whether it's the Liberal or the Labor or the Liberal government, they don't want to discuss it. They don't want to bring that on the table. They talk crap about construction, and in the meantime, we've got over the last 12 months, we've had over 7,000 small to medium builders go bust. And traders just don't want to pick up tools anymore. We're losing that workforce. We're bringing in more architects and engineers into the building sector, but those bastards don't want to. They don't want to get their little hands dirty by. They just want to tap on keyboards and play with rulers and pencils and rubbers. They don't want to pick up a trowel and they don't want to pick up a brick. They don't want to. They don't want to be breathing gyprock dust or getting paint over their little toupees. They don't want manual labor. So we're bringing in the wrong labor force. So as we've said before, how many engineers do we need to build a to build? How many architects do we need to build? I mean, it was what close only close to 3% overall in general terms that from all the all the PR that have that have been that have been granted that make up the construction industry, and out of that 2.6 or 3%, the majority are white collar workers, not your blue collar workers that you need. So if we start talking serious, they're the three points, main points that among other things, of course. That you need to look at. So until then, what we're seeing on the ground, it is different to and then we start going down the slope of talking about the different investment groups and investment class, transferring their investment portfolios from one class to residential property, not commercial. Then it's a different conversation, and as you say, it's a different conversation for every sector or every market across India. There are many markets across the landscape. There's 634, 636, maybe more now, suburbs in the Sydney region. So there you go. If you're looking at a suburb as a market, there's 635, 634 different markets, and within that suburb there are markets as well, and it's a type of class of property. So yeah, it's a hard and lengthy conversation that that nobody that's in power, that nobody that can influence make the influence make real influence once they have one. That's probably but because it's easier to kick the Aussie in the backside and tell them to shut up and to tell them to get back to to and start adopting another another part-time job or weekend job in order to to pay $12 for a dozen eggs or whatever it is now, or was it I saw the other day $6.90 for a kilo of tomatoes.
Oh, well. Well, yes, I mean the cost of living continue to bubble higher and a lot higher than the official statistics. But I'll just make the point here, Edwin, that the lending data which came out for the end of last month showed that housing credit was again up by 0.5%, and it's continuing to grow at an annual rate of 5.9%. That's the highest so far in the cycle. And within that, as you mentioned, investor credit is growing at a marginally higher pace than owner-occupiers, up 0.6%. That's equivalent to 6.3% over the year, compared with 0.5 at 5.8% to June, respectively. And the former is close to the 2022 cycle peak of 6.6%. So we are seeing credit growing significantly faster than incomes or inflation, and that's putting more pressure on more households. The other interesting observation here, the Q2 lending indicators from the ABS will come out on August the 13th. Now, they used to publish these indicators every month, but now they stopped and only do it once a quarter. So effectively, that's not going to give us a lot of good information, and it's going to be too late to make much sense of it all. But my point is simply this, Edwin, that the momentum with regard to credit is still very strong. And that means we've still got quite a few people who can enter the market and buy and get those big mortgages. And even with the current interest rate settings and the tax breaks and everything else, they're still doing quite well out of it. So this market is by, by no means cooked. But those three levers you talk about, if there was a change in the wind, and if they were to change, then it could be a very different story. But I'm not expecting significant rate cuts now from this point. I'm considering quite a lot of momentum in terms of approvals, although whether those approvals will actually turn to buildings appearing, because there's always a lag, of course, and you can't get the workers. And as you say, the number of buildings, builder contractions that are actually building contractors disappearing, it is rising. So with that context, we might just check out the numbers then. And it's worth noting, I think, here, Edwin, that on the 22nd of July, which was the last figures we looked at, 20,098 in the Sydney region for domain. On the 4th of August, the 19,694, so a small fall of those listed properties in the Greater Sydney region. Interestingly, again, that the mix is pretty much the same, and with a lot of lemons, as we'll come on to in a second. In the chart that I think is the most interesting is this one that shows the number listing is higher than last year. So that's continuing to see that trend there. And if we look in Melbourne, we can see that on the 22nd, 24,996 compared to 24,635. So a slight easing down in Melbourne as well. But, you know, same sort of trend. And indeed, note also the houses is still the big chunk there, as you'd expect. In Brisbane, of course, 3,448 on the 22nd, 3,271 on the 4th. But the really fascinating part of all this is auctions. And you can see here the auction numbers are looking, pretty well down, despite the auction clearance rates, quote, being at all-time highs, according to some of the people. But look at this one. This is the killer. This is showing you the auction comparisons for 2024 versus 2025. And Edwin, this is a biggie.
It is. And we still haven't heard anything from the mainstream media. Talk about it. They talk about the in general terms, the country numbers, Australia-wide, but they don't talk about what's happening in Sydney. I think it's fascinating. I think there's, apart from the education that our people get, in the noise that we've been making about underquoting and the shenanigans that are planned, the mainstream media still haven't cottoned on to the. I mean, we're running at, you could say that we're running at about 62 to 65%. The numbers that we were running in 2024, I mean, these are pretty low numbers. I mean, this is sort of pandemic sort of numbers, if you recall, and that in a way is putting the how can I put it, the false perception that and that's why you got your high clearance rates, because there's fewer properties on my, and a lot of people unfortunately think that that's the only way that you can buy properties, by going to auction. And a lot of the suburbs that promote that, and a lot of agencies that promote that. And this is why people have got to be very, very careful. They've got to be more aware of the fact that, and often the case is, the ones that want to get sold by auction are those that have had that are being spruced up with the showroom renovations that we've discussed for a quick sale, because it's really a case of caveat emptor, and you don't really get in much chance of doing proper due diligence to find out all the nuts and bolts and see if you're either buying a lemon or you're buying something that's really good, and then emotion runs high. So yeah, but they're very, very low.
Yep, and there's more lemons. I keep finding out when I do my one-on-ones, more lemons. In other words, properties that are actually really not very good. In some cases, they've got defects, asbestos, all those things in there too. And just on the trends here, this is the other one that's quite interesting. It's showing you that there's a little bit of a downslide with regard to the Sydney market and the median home value tracker compared to the Melbourne story. So, there's a little bit of stuff going on there. But I'm fascinated because, of course, the mainstream have been quoting Melbourne as a booming market. Well, just go and look at the anti-spruik that I did, because that shows you that it's not really booming at all. It might be moving slightly up, but we had this very significant downturn over the last two or three years. And look at houses. There are still houses that are languishing and are still lower and are still not selling. And days on market are blowing out. And then when you look at the quality of them, you say, well, that's probably the reason why. They're lemons in many cases.
Yeah. The reason why they're saying that it's booming, Mark and Martin, and this is why our followers and our viewers are very, very attuned to sifting the bullshit from reality. And the reason why they say they're moving is, if you recall, the mainstream media were pushing the narrative that, the investors are back, the investors are back. Well, the investors that went back, in my opinion, they've gone back prematurely, because the majority of the conversation with the WeChat chatterers, the investment groups here that Dusty and Evan have, I mean, they're still trying to sell. They still want out. And the unfortunate thing is, like I said, the silent tigers that have gone down there prematurely are gonna get their fingers burnt, because there's still a in a lot of places there in Melbourne, there's an understanding amongst the WeChat chatterers that it could still drop another 5-10%, and it'll take a long time before they make. So the speculation is what's really shifted some of those. Some areas of Melbourne, some markets, not so much your owner occupiers. Hopefully, it gets to a point where it becomes a lot more affordable for first home buyers to jump in. But the unfortunate thing is, the majority of the homes that are for sale, the freestanding homes that are for sale, are in areas where they've got a lot of problems with the demographics and the vagrancy and the crime rates, climbing, high. So, again, what do you do? It's back where some of the western suburbs and the southwestern suburbs of Sydney were, 20, 25 years ago.
No, it is absolutely right, Edwin. And I was thinking about that the other day, looking at some of the historical statistics I've got. The crime rates and mortgage stress, by the way, are very strongly correlated. So when you can see high levels of mortgage stress in my numbers, I can map it quite well to the high crime rates. So I'm not sure which comes first, but it's like chicken and eggs. The two are very much linked.
Yeah.
Now, we'll just look at the rentals briefly. So this is the story for the rents in Sydney on the 22nd, 11,514 available, and then 11,156 on the 4th of August. And in Melbourne, 11,851 on the 22nd of July, compared with 11,586 on the 4th. So, minor variations there. But again, I'm still highlighting the fact that rents are still going up, and whilst the totality did say that the growth rate over the last 12 months from advertised rents was a little bit down on where it was previously, the bottom line is, though, that many people are still being confronted with cycle rent increases in the properties they're living in. And that's not caught in the advertised rental data at all. And that's the missing part of the puzzle, which unfortunately a lot of people are not across. Well, Edwin, we got to the end of the show pretty much, and your voice is still just about there. Well done. But you've just got a quick tip for 2025.
Yeah, look, but based on what's happened over the last week, people have just got to learn to negotiate harder. And it's an opportunity if they're going to be buying, getting into the market in wherever you want to get into. Obviously, our backyard is Sydney. So just negotiate harder, because there are a lot of properties that are lingering on the market, and and you'll see that across social media platforms, and even old mate Tom across his platform is talking about how auctions are taking longer to get through. So you gotta, and that's the game. That's what I've said. That is one of the many strategies that you use in order to, you gotta make the auctioneer suffer. So you gotta negotiate harder, because you're not negotiating for a $250,000 home out of Blacktown anymore. You're negotiating for a $1.2 million home out of Blacktown now, if it's at auction. So you gotta negotiate harder, take them to task. As we've been saying, there are a lot more lemons on the market than double A or triple A class properties. So you need to be aware of that. And I'll close off with saying, now we're assisting two home buyers, recent home buyers, with the homes that we didn't buy. These are just through our different teams that we work with, they've contacted us, and because they're in the pickle, they're in the jam. One of them bought a house, two-story house, with flashy newly renovated bathrooms, Martin. Not too long ago, just over a year ago. And guess what? Those flashy newly renovated bathrooms have failed, and they've just had a plumber go in there and say, "Look, you got to redo the bath. The bathrooms are just gone. The waterproofing's gone. They're leaking from the two bathrooms upstairs are leaking to the downstairs floor." So that basically that's again, they're bought on emotion from what I've been told. And because the now they thought so they in my as I've been saying, in my opinion, although it may cost you, let's round it off to $35,000, $40,000 to do a bathroom, with a lot of bells and whistles. But the thing is, you're paying premium for those bathrooms. You're paying for the convenience. So in actual dollars and cents, you didn't really pay 45 each for the newly renovated bathrooms. You actually paid more closer to 100 for each bathroom because of the convenience of just moving in and already having it done. That's the intrinsic value of a renovated bathroom and the emotion that goes with it. So, but guess what? Now they've got to spend the $40,000 per bathroom to redo it. So you've paid the 200 grand on the way in, and now you've got to pay another 100 grand to fix them up. So you've got to be careful. And the last story is again another young couple, unfortunately, where we've had our inspectors go in there, and now they've found that because they relied on the building and pest inspection report by the agent, obviously, it's caveat emptor, and these are only visual inspections. Again, they were trying to do a small extension renovation to the newly bought home, and they found close to 5 ton of asbestos that's been buried under the house, and that's that as I've said, this is what you find if you get caught up in the emotional windmill. And you don't know how to do your proper due diligence, and unfortunately, people are they think that the selling agents are on their side. They're not.
Very good point, Edwin. No, you've got to do your own due diligence, and don't accept the Mickey Mouse surveys that come as part of the selling program. Get your own. Make sure you do the due diligence on properties. And it's interesting that I had a conversation this last week with a one-to-one conversation with people who were actually quite smart about property, but actually didn't understand the difference between the report coming from the agent as part of the marketing program and a proper building and structural report. So I was able to take them through the differences, and they went off and got a structural report and were horrified to discover that the defects that they got from their own independent report were disastrous. And it meant that the value of the property was at least half a mil over where it should have been because of it. Now, they didn't progress with that property, but they nearly got burnt. They nearly got bitten because, one, the property was superficially up together because they'd spent a bit of beautifying money on it. And two, they were taking as gospel the marketing report that was done in sort of 15 minutes by somebody who probably didn't know what they were doing to support the campaign to sell the property. And they didn't understand the difference. And, we can only just continue to preach this gospel. It's critical, critical to do your own due diligence and make sure that you actually understand what you're getting into. Because once you've bought a property, you buy all the problems and all the downstream issues that Edwin has just highlighted with two properties. So this is critical news.
Yeah, look, and there's also another advantage that works in your favor when you get your own building and pest inspection report, because then you can use it as clear evidence to show the agent. As I've said, I've been saying for a very, very long time, most selling agents don't know the difference between a floor tile and a roof tile if it smacked them in the head. Yeah, they don't. And I'll give you a story. So I can share this story because this is just happened recently with one of our clients that we assisted them to buy a property. So they gave us their building inspection report. I said, yeah, thank you very much. Because it was for free. I needed some scribble paper. I needed a scribble pad. Could see it was only printed on one side, so I could use the back side to scribble on. So then I did my own. I went under the house myself, just to have a quick observation. Took some videos. Was able to go under the house about 2 3 meters under the house, and I took some photos and videos. Came outside. I said to the selling agent, mate, do you really know? Have you read your building inspection report? He goes, oh no, mate, you know how it is. We don't read that shit. That's just for the buyers. That's not for us. I said, oh, good. So I said, well, mate, well, these are the videos. This is the video. I thought, look at this. Look at this pier. Look how much it's clean. Look at these bearers. They're not even sitting on the piers over here. Blah blah blah. And I said, oh, mate, shit. I didn't take notice. So of course you don't, because you don't want to get in there, under the house and get your Armani suit dirty. But this is my job. And then he said, well, what does the owner want anyway? So oh, they're looking above the 1.4, mate. So I said, well, look, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 1.32. So we cut the deal at 1.35, because I said to the agent, look, 1.4, if the subfloor area was in good condition, probably worth that. But we ended up negotiating a 1.35. So because I knew I took one of my builders there today, I said, mate, fix this up properly. What's it going to cost? But I sort of have had a rough idea what it would really cost. And said, oh mate, I'll have to do this and that. I said, I know what you have to do. What's the damages? He goes, oh, do you reckon your client will pay 12 grand? And I said, yeah, they'll pay 12 grand if you do this and that extra. He goes, oh, all right. So, that's what I mean. So that's the other side of investing a bit of, if you really want a property. Now, our clients really wanted this property. Yeah. So, and why give them 1.4? When you can negotiate with a, obviously we've got a building inspector. They're also to note it down so that they can have. We went through all that, but to cut the long story shorter, this was the difference. Yeah, it's going to cost them an extra 12 grand, but we got it off market before it went on market, and we got it at what the owners, were because alarm bells went, because even the owners didn't know what was going on under there. So we're able to negotiate. So that's something that you can, it's a tool, it's a weapon that you can use against, to that we've been teaching our followers and viewers, for many years, Martin.
Absolutely, a really good object lesson. So get the data, be informed, use it, learn how to use the weapon, and you'll get a better outcome as a result of it. Edwin, we got to the end. Well done. Thank you very much. Great to get you back on. And I look forward to hopefully next week, and I hope your trajectory of improvement continues. But we managed to get there. Well done.
Thank you very much. Cheers, man. All the best.
Take care. Bye-bye.